This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Markets brace for a historic surge in U.S. consumer prices. Plus, North Korea tests another hypersonic missile. We'll look at why that's not sparking a diplomatic panic. And NATO faces a major test of its resolve as alliance officials sit down with Russia.
Russia has said quite clearly that it does not want Ukraine and Georgia to become members of NATO. It sees these former Soviet republics as part of its sphere of influence.
It's Wednesday, January 12th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The Biden administration plans to ship millions of rapid COVID-19 tests to schools beginning later this month. The effort will see 5 million tests sent to K-12 schools each month in order for them to implement test-to-stay policies. The aim is to use frequent testing to keep students in class even after COVID-19 exposure. The administration says it will also expand lab capacity in order to accommodate millions of additional PCR tests for schools. North Korea claims to have successfully tested yet another hypersonic missile, its second such test in under a week, and its third since September. Hypersonic missiles travel at least 5 times the speed of sound and fly closer to Earth than ballistic missiles, making them harder to detect on radar. Our Korea Bureau Chief Timothy Martin says the new weapons are more of a regional threat, unlike previous nuclear tests or intercontinental ballistic missiles.
It was widely expected that North Korea would return to weapons tests, though the situation does not seem as tense as 2017, when the Korean Peninsula really was on the brink of war. We are seeing an increased level of launches from Pyongyang, but we've also seen an increase in launches from South Korea as well.
North Korea considers its hypersonic missile to be the most strategically significant part of its new arms development policy. Airbus has beat out Boeing to earn the title of the world's biggest plane maker by deliveries for the third year running. Boeing sold more aircraft than Airbus last year, but only delivered half as many passenger jets. This as it continues to contend with the crisis that engulfed its 737 MAX jet and separate manufacturing issues with its 787 Dreamliner. It currently controls 60% of that market, and its market share is expected to increase. And Turks are piling into cryptocurrencies, injecting tens of billions of dollars into crypto exchanges in the final quarter of last year amid a major slide in the Turkish lira. Our Middle East correspondent Jared Malson says that even though Turkey banned cryptocurrency as payment last year, a 40% slide in the lira is causing people to look for alternate investments.
People are trying to find safer places to put their money, including gold, including foreign currency, and also including cryptocurrency. Clearly, cryptocurrency is still a risky investment, but I think there's a kind of social effect where people are saying, hey, I saw my friend doing this and I'm going to give it a shot.
Turks aren't alone in flocking to cryptos in response to government economic policies. Many Nigerians have embraced Bitcoin amid currency devaluations and new limits on access to foreign currencies. Today's U.S. inflation number is front and center for investors amid a major week for economic data. December's consumer prices are likely to have closed out the year at the highest levels since 1982, and this as the supply chain crunch and labor shortage drive up prices on everything from cars to furniture. For more, we're joined by markets reporter Anna Hertenstein. Hi, Anna.
Hey, good to be here.
Anna, what are we expecting from today's inflation number?
So economists are expecting inflation to be around a 7.1% annual rate. And as you said, that would mark the fastest pace since 1982, and an acceleration from the previous month.
Yesterday, the World Bank warned of the economic impact of rising prices. How is this affecting global growth?
The World Bank is forecasting that the global economy slows this year. It said it's expecting this to happen because of the Omicron variant, supply chain disruptions, labor shortages. It's also expecting the slowdown in growth to continue in 2023 as well.
What does this all mean for everyday shoppers? Are we seeing any changes in consumer behavior yet?
So we have been hearing from some people that they're changing their habits because of these higher prices. It's affecting things like their food choices, their hobbies. We've been hearing from people that they're careful about their thermostats at home and where they buy gas because of higher energy prices. So it does seem to be feeding through in some cases.
But despite that, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell has given the Senate a somewhat optimistic outlook. What is his take on inflation?
So he said in the congressional testimony that he was optimistic that these supply chain issues would ease this year, which could help bring inflation down. But he also told lawmakers that if inflation stays elevated, the Fed would be ready to step on the brakes in terms of stimulus. And this is what matters for markets. It's all about the Fed. Higher, more sustained inflation likely means the Fed would have to tighten monetary policy sooner and faster. That could come in the form of higher interest rates, accelerated tapering, and this is an idea they put forward in minutes recently. So this inflation print will be really closely watched by people in the market for clues on what the Fed could do in the coming months.
Lots to watch for today. Anna Hertenstein is a markets reporter for the Journal. Anna, thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Coming up, officials from NATO and Russia will meet for a rare face-to-face today. We'll look at the challenges confronting the defense alliance as it aims to project unity after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
The U.S. and NATO have deployed thousands of troops to rebuild the alliance's front line amid growing tensions with Russia. In response, President Vladimir Putin is exerting pressure on surrounding countries such as Ukraine. With Kremlin officials coming to NATO headquarters in Brussels today, the question remains, how will this 30-country alliance address Russia's increasing assertiveness? For more, we're pleased to be joined by our NATO reporter, James Marson. Hi, James.
Hi there.
James, how often do Russia and NATO meet like this? How big of a deal is what we're seeing this week?
So this is the first time that the NATO-Russia Council will have met since 2019, so it's important. Russia says it feels threatened by NATO. NATO has enlarged since the fall of the Soviet Union by adding, as members, countries that used to be part of the Warsaw Pact. Russia says it feels threatened by how the US and its allies are providing aid and training the military in Ukraine, which has been fighting a war against Russian-led separatists in its east since 2014. So Russia has gathered tens of thousands of troops on Ukraine's border and says it may look for a military solution if the West doesn't give it binding security guarantees.
Among those guarantees, right, is a demand that NATO agree to never accept Ukraine or Georgia, I believe, as members. How does that demand fit in with NATO's own policy, and could the alliance ever agree to those terms?
NATO has what's called an open door policy. That means that any country can apply for membership, and then it's up to the current members to decide whether to let them in. Now, Ukraine and Georgia have long rather wanted membership. And in 2008, NATO came up with a fudge because Germany and France didn't want to go along with a US plan to offer membership. So the fudge says that Ukraine and Georgia will eventually become members of NATO, but doesn't give a timeline for that membership.
So Russia just thinks they can drag out that gradual progression towards NATO membership or stop it altogether?
Right, that's exactly what Russia wants to do. Russia has said quite clearly that it does not want Ukraine and Georgia to become members of NATO. It sees these former Soviet republics as part of its sphere of influence. Also, it's not very happy about the aid that NATO countries have been giving to Ukraine to build up Ukraine's military.
So, James, turning to NATO here, what can they do to possibly counter the Kremlin in Ukraine?
So there's not actually a lot that NATO itself can do. The alliance has made clear that its mutual defense pact doesn't extend to Ukraine. So if Russia invades again, then no troops would ride to the rescue from NATO. Now, NATO members have provided military aid and training to Ukraine, but there's also been some disagreement about that. For example, Germany has been blocking the sale of sniper rifles to Ukraine via a NATO process, saying that NATO should only be providing defensive weapons. The US and Europe are also considering what measures such as economic sanctions they could levy on Russia if it invades again. But in terms of immediate military help in the form of troops, that's not going to happen.
All right, so beyond threatening countries that are in NATO's periphery, as opposed to attacking NATO countries directly, what are some other possible NATO weak points that Russia is trying to capitalize on?
Another one of NATO's weak points really is disunity, and that's something Russia's always looking to exploit. NATO is divided over what to do. There are countries like Germany and France who urge caution and they want negotiations with Russia. Germany, for example, has very strong economic ties with Russia. And then on the other hand, you have Eastern countries like Poland and the Baltic states who are very worried that if you give Putin any concessions, he'll simply come back for more.
Turning to the situation at the Russia-Ukraine border, is the military buildup that we'd heard so much about over the last few weeks continuing, or has that given way to a type of diplomatic brinksmanship?
So NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said that the military buildup is continuing, that there are tens of thousands of troops around Ukraine, and they are equipped with heavy weaponry. But diplomats say it isn't currently at a level that would suggest imminent invasion. Russia itself says it has no plans to invade, but Mr. Stoltenberg says that Russia's done it before. Russia did it in 2014 when it seized Crimea, then launched a covert operation in Ukraine's east. It's done it in 2008 in Georgia. So the West is largely saying nothing imminent, but Russia is gathering the forces in place to do it, and it has done it before.
James, Russian troops are also present in Kazakhstan at the moment, but we understand they may be due to leave the country pretty soon. Fill us in on that.
Right. That's what officials are saying, that the situation in Kazakhstan is now stabilizing, that the government has managed to reestablish control, and that the troops should be able to leave within a few days. But there's something more important that's also happened here. The intervention is going to have a long-lasting effect on the region because it showed that Moscow is really the security provider in the region. So the Kazakh president was reliant on Russia to bail him out in a situation where his government was wobbling. And that just makes him more dependent on Russia now and in the future.
Right, so that's military power, but what about maybe soft power? Could the US and NATO play a hearts and minds campaign in some of these former Soviet countries to try and combat Russian influence?
In certain places, yes. I mean, in Kazakhstan, there were hopes that democracy would flourish after the end of the Soviet Union, but it didn't really happen. You had an authoritarian leader in power who sidelined opposition, took control of the economy and the whole political scene. So the space for the US to encourage democracy there is quite narrow. But then in other countries like Ukraine, the situation is somewhat brighter for the West. There was a revolution there in 2014 that kicked out a corrupt pro-Russian president. And now, in the midst of a war with Russian-led separatists, the country is firmly in favor of integrating with NATO and the European Union. But the problem is that these organizations don't have a unified position on whether to grant membership. So we come back to something that we were speaking about earlier. The answer for now on membership in those organizations is no, and that leaves Ukraine more vulnerable to Russia.
It's fascinating. James Marson is the Journal's NATO reporter. James, thank you so much for breaking this all down for us.
My pleasure.
And finally, what's more quintessentially American than Fifth Avenue, Tiffany Jewelry, and its iconic blue box? But Tiffany's acquisition last year by the French company LVMH is resulting in a bit of a culture clash. Suzanne Kapner covers the retail industry for the Journal and describes the stir that's being caused as Tiffany's new owners try to transform it into more of a global brand.
A group of Tiffany employees in April sent around a memo that offered tips for working with the French. And some of the tips are quite amusing. They said that French people share more negative feedback and that you should expect less warm and fuzzy. Amazing, fabulous, and excessively positive comments are not the norm. Now, this memo was not sanctioned by management, but it does sort of reflect some of the unease within the company at the time.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.